God said to Moses, I will be with you beyond the wilderness. God says to us, I will be with you in your wilderness places. In this time of loss and grief and anger, God is already there.
That's the Reverend Dr. Leanne Van Dyke. And today, as part of our 75th anniversary celebration, she shares a challenging message entitled, God of the Wilderness. I'm Peter Wallace, and this is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's historic Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. In 1945, we began broadcasting every week as the Protestant Hour, and since 2002, as Day One. In 2020, we proudly celebrate 75 years of sharing the good news of Jesus Christ around the world. Now, here's your host, Peter Wallace, to introduce today's preacher.
Thank you, Sherry. Today on Day One, as we continue our special series celebrating our 75 years on the radio, we're delighted to have with us the Reverend Dr. Leanne Van Dyke, President and Professor of Theology at Columbia Theological Seminary in Decatur, Georgia. Before coming to Columbia in 2015, Leanne was Dean and Vice President of Academic Affairs at Western Theological Seminary for 11 years, and earlier taught at San Francisco Theological Seminary and the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, California. An ordained Presbyterian minister, she is a graduate of Calvin College, earned a master's in early childhood education at Western Michigan University, and her Master of Divinity from Calvin Theological Seminary. And she received her Ph.D. in Systematic Theology from Princeton Theological Seminary. Leanne, welcome to Day One.
Thank you so much.
Columbia Theological Seminary was one of four educational institutions whose leaders came together in 1945, along with denominational leaders, to form the Southern Religious Radio Conference to produce a weekly radio program called The Protestant Hour, now Day One. Tell us about the history and the impact that Columbia Seminary has made and is making in the church and the world since then.
We have had a stronger tradition and history of preparing pastors for congregations. That has been the sweet spot of Columbia Seminary for many decades. Now, that goal and that commitment certainly still stays with us and guides us, but our focus and our energies have now become more globally centered, certainly more multi-denominationally centered, what used to be a Presbyterian seminary and founded by Presbyterians has now become a very multi-denominational community. And that has diversified us in wonderful ways. So we remain committed to some of those early guideposts, but we also find ourselves stretching into the world in which we now live and wanting deeply to be responsive to the global context.
In your sermon, you will take us to the wilderness of the Exodus, and many of us can sense that we today are living in a wilderness with a pandemic that seems to refuse to go away, a recognition of the systemic racism that has infected our lives and institutions for generations, and an uncertain future. So how has Columbia Seminary been living into this present wilderness?
It's been a challenge. The pandemic hit in full force in March, and we had to make some hard but necessary decisions. We put all of our courses online in the middle of March, and this was a big learning curve for our faculty and our students. But everyone leaned in really hard, and I'm proud of the resilience of our community. Then we put all the summer courses online, and we've made the additional decision to put all of our fall courses online. And we believe that our early decision to put community safety first was the right decision. And we actually have observed other institutions now doing a little bit of backpedaling toward the kind of decisions we made.
And in view of the protests for racial justice that have come about in our country over the past months, the Board of Trustees at Columbia Seminary has put together a document called Repairing the Breach, which commits Columbia Seminary to the flourishing of Black people in specific ways. How will that happen?
We began to feel so convicted that we couldn't just issue statements.
Mm-hmm.
We needed action and measurable outcomes. We needed to make concrete commitments. So the board approved a document that we created internally that identifies those action steps. We are a community that's about 50% students, staff, and faculty of color.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it's our Black faculty, staff, and students that we are just feeling compelled to take specific action. All of our community of color are, of course, deeply important to us. But because Columbia Seminary was founded in a context and by people who took enslavement for granted, that is such a deep awareness that we have, and we feel compelled to repair the breach.
Mm. As you mentioned, you'll continue to offer online education in this new semester this fall because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Do you think these practices will change theological education in some ways in the future?
Yes. Mm. Theological education and higher education in general will undergo significant sort of seismic shifts. We're not sure what that will be, but the older model of residential higher education and degrees has already shifted in the last 30 years because of online, and those shifts are likely to continue. Will there be theological education in local contexts, in congregations, accessing experts and degree programs virtually?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. So we're going into this next chapter of our seminary's life with our eyes wide open, our ears tuned to what the best wisdom is. And then we intend to be wise and bold and prudent all at the same time.
Mm. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
So, Leanne, in these divisive times in which we live, with the turmoil in politics and race, economic status, and more, what should preachers be doing in their pulpits in this sort of environment? And how can preaching both challenge us and help us get through this?
You know, we sometimes hear from preachers and congregations, don't bring politics into the pulpit. I think that's deeply mistaken. I understand the emotional tenderness of these times and how easy it is to feel blamed and shamed. But the gospel is at its core a political declaration of God's love for the world, regardless of status and race and economic wealth. That is a political declaration that the Christian faith is committed to. Therefore, we must bring that good news into the pulpits. Now, to do that in ways that are empowering rather than shaming, I think is really important. But I do believe that the gospel fundamentally is a political energy and that it comes straight from the heart of God.
Well, Leanne, your sermon today focuses on the Old Testament lesson for this Sunday from Exodus chapter 3. Would you set the scene for us? Where are we in the story of the Exodus?
This is right at the beginning. Moses has not yet said, "Let my people go," to Pharaoh. The plagues have not yet happened. Moses, in fact, had just escaped from Egypt because he was being hunted as a murderer, and thus his fugitive status is made clear here right in verse 1 of Exodus chapter 3. So Moses is in the wilderness with his father-in-law's sheep.
Would you read it for us?
Sure. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said further, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them. So come, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? He said, I will be with you. And this shall be the sign for you that it is I who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God on this mountain. But Moses said to God, If I come to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your ancestors has sent me to you, and they ask me, What is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. He said further, Thus you shall say to the Israelites, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, Thus you shall say to the Israelites, The Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my title for all generations. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Leanne, we look forward to hearing your sermon. It's entitled, God of the Wilderness. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you, Peter. The Moses we find here in the wilderness is not the Hollywood blockbuster version of Moses or the Michelangelo statue version of Moses. You know, the heroic figure with a somber, noble expression and long flowing hair. This is often the image we conjure up when we think of Moses. But no, the Moses we find here in the wilderness is not a hero or a prophet or a leader. He is a young man, a refugee, a sheep herder, an outlaw. The Moses we find here is a survivor of trauma, an adopted son who sat uneasy with his royal identity, a murderer, a fugitive from justice. And this story, here in the wilderness, after all the drama that he has already endured, after all that, this story of Moses is still just beginning. Moses can certainly be excused for thinking that he had had quite enough tragedy and danger in his life, and did not want anything to do with saving his people from bondage in Egypt. In the very first verse of our reading, we are told that Moses led his flock Beyond the Wilderness. The first listeners of this story, thousands of years ago, would have felt the hair on the back of their neck stand up when they heard that phrase, beyond the wilderness. It is an ominous phrase that we mostly pass by as we read. But wilderness in the Old Testament, it is mentioned more than 300 times. Wilderness indicates danger, foreboding, dread. In the wilderness are animals that lurk and attack. Hunger and thirst are always a threat. These are unpopulated, untracked, unsafe areas. And Moses was not only in the wilderness, he was beyond the wilderness. The wild animals there might be even hungrier, even more ferocious. Moses was keeping his father-in-law's sheep, which sounds tame enough, but he was in very dangerous territory. He was beyond the wilderness. Three words in English, just two words in Hebrew. And we know that we are in a very scary place. Being in a very scary place is not at all hard for us to imagine in these days of pandemic and protest. Like Moses, we are beyond the wilderness in this year of fear and uncertainty that has stretched for many months now. Some of us have lost loved ones and colleagues to the deadly disease called COVID-19. All of our lives have been disrupted and upended by restrictions and economic collapse. And then we are also beyond the wilderness in this year of encountering the insidious power and perversion of racism. We are beyond the wilderness in unemployment numbers in our communities and global unrest that inevitably hits women and children and the poor harder and deeper. We are beyond the wilderness. And so this story is for all of us now. This story is the word of the Lord for us today. It reveals to us two things about God that we need to hear now. First, there is no wilderness so wild that God cannot find us there. This is a scary place, but God is there. In fact, God is there waiting for Moses. God shows up first and puts flame to a scrubby bush. Moses shows up second. The bush is already on fire, but does not burn down. It displays an inexhaustible divine energy, perpetually aflame, this bush. So, not only does God show up beyond the wilderness, God was there first and revealed holy divine presence in this most unlikely place. Is this something we need to hear on this day, in this time of loss and grief and anger? God is already there. God is right now revealing holy divine presence in any of the unlikely places of our lives. Our places of pain, our places of loneliness and longing, our places of intense anger, our places of exhaustion, our places of depression and hollow emptiness. God is already there. And when God shows up, our wilderness places become holy places. "Remove the sandals from your feet," said God, "for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." Beyond the wilderness turns out to be holy, not God-forsaken. The wilderness places in our lives, too, are holy and wide open to God's presence and action and voice and call. The second thing that this story reveals to us about God is that God is not deterred by our shortcomings and failures. Moses has an arm's-length list of reasons and excuses and loopholes as to why he is not the one to do this hard thing, to follow this call of God. And he names them all. "This is a case of mistaken identity," he says. "God, I think you mean to call someone who is strong and brave and smart and connected to power brokers who can swing a deal for you, God. Not me. I'm a fugitive, an immigrant, a marked man. No, God, not me." But God is not deterred by our shortcomings and failures. God calls Moses in spite of his checkered past. God calls David, even though he was just a shepherd boy. God calls Esther, even though she was just a harem girl. God calls Jonah, even though he tried to run away. God calls Mary, even though she was on the bottom rung of society. God calls you, even though you don't feel wise enough or skilled enough or brave enough in this complicated and painful world. If God calls Moses in spite of everything, I suppose we shouldn't be too surprised if God calls us. Because God is not deterred by our shortcomings and failures. This story not only reveals these two things about God, but it also reveals something about Moses and about us, too. And that is that the people God calls, flawed people like Moses and like me and like you, are burdened with doubts and indecision. We resist God's call. We come up with excuses. We procrastinate, obfuscate, deliberate, and frustrate the clear call of God. We drag our feet. It's true, we do. But God persists and promises, "I will be with you." And a few verses later in this same chapter, God even identifies a new and mysterious divine name. "I am who I am." Or maybe the translation is, "I will be who I will be." Or even in the suggestion of one biblical commentator, "Whenever God is being God, God will be the kind of God God is." No matter what the translation, it is a name that signals promise. God will be the kind of God that God is. Many years ago, a young pastor in Switzerland by the name of Karl Barth was trying to find the right words to express the God that is revealed in a burning bush, in Jesus Christ, in the Holy Spirit, in the church. And although he wrote millions of words in his life, this young pastor thought he could do no better than one brief statement. He said, "God is God." This means that we are not. Our culture is not, our economy is not, our racial identity is not. None of these things are God. Only God is God. This shortest of all faith statements has two implications. First, it is a solemn warning not to build any alternate gods. John Calvin, another pastor many years ago in Geneva, once said that the human heart is a factory of idols. We produce and then try to sell alternatives to God. In fact, there is a whole warehouse of cheap alternatives to God that we ourselves have manufactured. But this short statement, God is God, is also a deep comfort. If God is God, then we believe that God will be the kind of God that God is, a God slow to anger and abounding in loving kindness. God said to Moses, "I will be with you beyond the wilderness." God says to us, "I will be with you in your wilderness places." In these days of dark discouragement, God's promise is a light breaking in from on high. Thanks be to God for God's inexhaustible, never-ending, always present love. Amen.
Our preacher today was the Reverend Dr. Leanne Van Dyke, President and Professor of Theology at Columbia Theological Seminary in Decatur, Georgia. For a free transcript of her sermon, God of the Wilderness, call us at 404-815-9110. That's 404-815-9110. Or write to us at Day One, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. This is Peter Wallace. Next week on Day One, as we continue our special 75th anniversary series, we're honored to welcome the Reverend Kevin Strickland, Bishop of the Southeastern Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America based in Atlanta, Georgia. His message is entitled, "Words Matter, Words Have Power." I hope you'll be listening. That's next time on Day One. Now, Leanne Van Dyke offers some final reflections for us on her sermon today. Leanne, you really captured a sense of what many of us are feeling being beyond the wilderness. I was struck by the fact, as you pointed out, that Moses here in Exodus 3 was not a hero or a prophet or a leader, but a young man, a refugee, an outlaw, a survivor of trauma, an adopted son, a murderer, a fugitive from justice. Like so many of the so-called Bible heroes, he was very human indeed, and yet look what he achieved. What does this tell us about the people God uses even today?
Well, it tells us that God's strange habit of calling very flawed people continues. The people that I work with and lead at Columbia Seminary, we are deeply wounded, flawed people, but yet we have this burning desire to serve God and bring a word of peace and comfort to the world. So I take from Moses my encouragement for my own call and those with whom I work.
It's not hard at all for us during these days of pandemic and protest to imagine a difficult place like that the Israelites were in. We find ourselves beyond the wilderness in many ways, but you remind us that first, there's no wilderness so wild that God cannot find us there. How can we better remind ourselves of that reality, that God is here with us in whatever wilderness we find ourselves in?
You know, I've loved this story in Exodus 3 for a long time, and for many years I was drawn particularly to the burning bush, and this was a story of divine revelation. And this time, as I studied it, I was drawn to that phrase, beyond the wilderness, and I thought, oh, this is a place of deep desolation where God is waiting for Moses, and that's the kind of comfort that I think is so important in these times when in many respects, we too feel that we are in a place of desolation. Mm. And to hear through this text that God is there already, I find deeply comforting.
Mm-hmm. And second, you said this story reveals that God is not deterred by our shortcomings and failures. This current time has ripped the cover off many of our failures, including racism and selfishness and fear. How do you imagine God might use us as believers in these times?
God is patient with our shortcomings, but God also calls us. Mm. So I think we can by no means kind of put a blanket of resistance and denial around ourselves as a community. And I think it's fair to say that often the clarion call of resisting racism has been resisted and denied. So now is our time, church. Now is our time to say we must come to grips with this. We must confess it, lament it, and then work to overcome it. Mm. And I am hopeful that this time of protest and powerful demonstrations will persist long enough so that the church has a chance to do that repentance and lament and work. Mm-hmm. I hope this doesn't just kind of ebb away. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful and prayerful about this time we're in right now.
Leanne, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will keep in mind in the days ahead?
What I hope this text, this story brings to the listeners is this double affirmation of comfort that God is there and accepting us, and strong encouragement to follow God's clear call toward our next steps, our next chapter. One without the other will trip. Mm. If we are just comforted and not active, that's not faithfulness. If we just march and shout and act without feeling this deep awareness of God's grace and love, we are going to burn out. Mm. So it's the double affirmation that I hope our listeners go away with.
Mm. Leanne Van Dyke, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Celebrating 75 years of ministry, Day One is the voice of America's historic Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Thank you for listening. I'm Sherry Miller wishing you all God's blessings on Day One and forever.